So this session is called Diversifying Beyond Your Normal Portfolio. So we wanted to talk about a couple of ideas that might be applicable to family offices and high net worth, especially in today's frothy markets, a little bit of the cycle-resistant idea of healthcare, and ask everybody here to talk a little bit about healthcare investing. I know the previous panel talked a bit about senior housing, and that's one of the ideas, but hospitals, medical offices, land with hospitals, where do we think in the U.S., Europe, and Asia there are opportunities in the healthcare field that might be pertinent as cycle-resistant investments? And I wanted to ask David for you to start.
Sure. Well, I could, you know, obviously talk for hours on this.
You only have a few minutes.
Healthcare is a big sector in this country. It's vitally important. It's necessity. It's really an inflexible demand curve. So it doesn't have maybe some of the dangers that a few other sectors have in terms of modernization, in terms of what the internet is doing to those businesses and sectors. So it's really, it'll always be something that we need. We're getting older as a population. Baby boomers are rapidly retiring at a clip of 10,000 a day. They're living longer, longevity's increasing. The ACA, you know, is huge. That'll bring 30 to 40 million new insured people into the healthcare system over the next 3 to 4 years. You might wonder, you know, what will happen with the next presidential election, who will come into office, will they support it or not? But I've, in this country, I've never seen an entitlement rescinded. You know, think about it. Have you? I mean, you know, anything, Social Security, Medicare, help, you know, food stamps, everything is, once it's in place, it tends to be a part of our system and demand. So the demand factors look very, very good. There are many ways to invest in medical across the spectrum, ranging from, you know, senior housing certainly something that had a false dawn a number of years ago. It seems to be coming into its own now. A lot more demand, a lot more market responsive solutions in terms of seniors. So that's really picking up. You know, what we do is medical office buildings, which I think has been the predominant mode of medical service delivery in this country, you know, on an outpatient basis. So I think that will continue to grow, particularly as hospitals become financially under more and more stress with the cost pressures of a more competitive market, more regulation. So we like the MOB space an awful lot. I think skilled nursing is an area that's also growing across the board. So medical as a part of our economy is huge. It's 18% now, amazing. It's been growing rapidly, you know, a little bit slower in the last few years. As a real estate sector, it's bigger than most of us realize. It's about $1 trillion all in, so it's a very large sector. And I think part of the opportunity is that it's been institutionalizing. You know, it's really not been a major investment class. It's been predominantly owned and operated by people who are not real estate experts, you know, hospitals and doctors. And so there's a great opportunity in taking that real estate and making it a lot more efficient, but certainly has a lot of great return characteristics. It's stable. The credit quality is often there. Tends to be a very good income generator. I can tell you, once doctors and hospitals get into a market area, that really drives the business, not really the cost of real estate per se. So, but I think on the macro level and on the property level, it's a very positive sector, and there are many ways to approach it and make money going forward.
Courtney? What we've been not just looking at, but implementing is hospital and healthcare services in Asia. And since this is a panel on diversifying outside of your traditional portfolio, I would say, in terms of looking at a global macro trend, that's an excellent place to consider. Hospital and healthcare services in Asia, the four fastest growing countries in Asia, which that we're focusing on, are Indonesia, India, Malaysia, and Vietnam. The investment thesis there is it's a growing population. There's a growing middle class. And there's actually an increased incident of lifestyle diseases. So there's a real need for affordable health care. Revenue growth in the space in Asia, hospital revenue growth has been about greater than 23% per year. And some of the actual properties that my group is involved in are even higher than that. There's favorable government policy, and per build is actually quite minimal. I mean, a 150-bed hospital there is about a $7 million all-in, and these hospitals are maturing. In 5 years, they're mature and cash flowing in double digits. We see this as a long-term trend.
Great.
Yeah.
Brett? Medical is very interesting. I mean, first of all, when you're looking at it in the real estate context, it's almost cycle neutral, right? I mean, David touched on this, but really, it's the closest thing to being neutral when it comes to the economic cycle, as you can find, except for maybe cemeteries. people are going to get sick. People are going to die. It's a fact. So it's something that I believe to be extremely stable in terms of an investment. And also, to David's point, I think David is the real expert on a medical office on this panel, so I'll defer to him. But it's definitely something that has not really become an institutional game until more recently. So you are seeing it now. The Carlyles of the world and other big institutions are investing in medical office and other types of medical real estate or healthcare real estate, but we're kind of at the beginning, and I think there's still significant opportunity there.
Sure. I think in the hospital space, just given the pressures that the ACA is putting on the hospital margins, they're going to have to start revisiting their traditional business model. It means they have to look outside of their four walls to try and keep those margins up. And so what you're seeing with a lot of hospitals and hospital networks is they're revisiting their physician alignment models. They're either partnering with local provider groups, and as a part of that, they're providing some dollars to those groups for either medical office building or maybe picking up their leases. So now you might see some hospital dollars flowing into that space where traditionally they've spent that money within their own four walls. And you know, as the accountable care organizations become really the method by which hospitals get paid, they're going to have to provide that care for the patient throughout their stay within the hospital and outside within an outpatient setting. So now there may be a shift for some of those dollars, reimbursement dollars, to be tied to how the patient does, say, within a nursing home environment or a SNF. So it's going to be really interesting. There's still a lot of questions on how that's going to work, but the certainty is that things are going to change, and the old business model is done. So how it ends up, it's going to be, there may be some opportunities there.
I'm not a healthcare expert at all, so I'll just talk to a couple of recent deals sort of in the last 6 months. We did a medical clinic, a pediatric neurosurgical care clinic in Germany. That was, we bought it with a $4 million lease on it with 2 years left. It was a special situation. We bought it through the debt. There was a complex intercreditor agreement where the junior lender had been holding up a sale for a few years, and there was a lot of tax complexity, so we got a nice deal on the property. We're going to sell it against a 5 cap after regearing the lease to a 20-year lease with 2 10-year extensions, but we gave them $1 million off on the rent. So it turned out to be quite a good deal for us, both because of the cap rate compression and also just the complexity around taxes and intercreditor. But what I would say about that deal is that the credit is just incredible, so it looks like a bond. It's extremely long-term, and I think in Europe the lease terms tend to be longer on these things. I don't know if you can get sort of 20 to 40-year leases here, and that's commonplace there. So it looks just like a bond at 5%, and I know that the buyer is taking out a loan at 60%, and they're getting that loan below 2% for 10-year fixed. So also debt rates in Europe are extremely low, which so you can still get positive leverage on these type of low-yielding investments. Since we're talking about out-of-the-box strange stuff, diversifying beyond your normal portfolio, I don't know if that makes us abnormal or paranormal. We're also have recently done, we started a programmatic investment plan. We've just done our first couple where we go to hospitals that are capacity constrained. We purchase their surface parking lot. We build structured parking and give them a capital infusion. And then we have a publicly traded shopping parking REIT that we sell master lease that parking lot to on, a 20-year basis. And that asset is yielding sort of 6 to 7% unlevered.
Any questions on medical or hospital before we move on to the next topic? Come on, somebody has to ask a question. There we go. David, you get that one.
Yes, definitely a bit more specialized, but a growing field, you know, growing big demand growth there, you know, in this country. Usually they're not as many standalone psychiatric. Usually they're multidisciplinary hospitals, which we prefer, obviously, because you're never, no one can be absolutely sure about reimbursables in one particular discipline going forward. So it can change. So it's a rarity that we would never buy, you know, that one discipline. They do exist, but they don't really trade very much. I've not really seen a special hospital, psychiatric hospital on the market, quite frankly.
Yes. Did everybody hear the question? It's about urgent care.
It is viable, but the future is a little uncertain under the ACA because it may not be reimbursable. So it's a big risk area. So I would not encourage anyone to go out and buy a whole portfolio of them right now. Wait to, you know, things shake out, you know, over the next election, next year, year and a half. As a part of an MOB, we think it's pretty viable, and they you know, for most states, it'll vary a little bit state to state. They are grandfathered in.
Last question on this.
Is Cortland hearing from your family office clients any interest in this?
So we're getting a lot of questions about what we could do to rebalance portfolios to ensure or look at downside risk and how to protect our clients during the frothy markets, and medical in general and healthcare seems to be a hot topic of what people are looking at because, as said here, it's a cycle resistant sector. So we are looking a lot at medical, both here in the US and then outside where there is less liability risk like there is here in hospitals and other less litigious society. So hopefully that answers. So on that, we talked a little bit about yield during this conversation, and DJ this morning was talking about how they look for a minimum of 25% back on every one of their deals. Core today is at 7.5 net to investors and opportunistic or value add somewhere about in the teens. I was wondering how you all felt about what would be a interesting play or a black swan outside of your normal portfolio investment and what type of yield you think it might have that would make it interesting to people in the room as something different to look at during this part of the cycle or where we are. And I would ask David to start.
Sure. Asset by asset, deal by deal, is that asset by asset, market by market? I think that's what I heard a couple times today already, and that's how I believe you find deals. So we just look under every rock until we find a good one. One we have just gone hard on the land is a development deal, which is a housing play. So the way it's structured is key to the performance. We bought the land conditioned on 70% pre-sales of the homes, and then we're building about 150 homes there. And then the home buyers pay for the homes in 4 installments over the development period. So we're using that cash instead of financing in order to build the homes. We make some profits on the home building, and then we pour all those profits back into an adjacent commercial that's a supermarket with about 50 apartments above. So the net to the investor is going to be 15% unlevered, which will lever up after it's completed on the commercial. And again, debt on that product will probably be, depending on how much debt you want to put on it, but we just closed another piece of debt in the Netherlands, right around 2% for 10-year debt. So it's a, I think that's a, I'll invest in that all day long.
Corey?
That's a tough question. With healthcare, I mean, it's a large industry, but it's a local business in that your care has got to be provided to the people that live in that primary or secondary service area. So, if you're looking at dynamics, that might give you a kind of a black swan type of a scenario. Having a hospital sign on with, say, a SNF facility, where now the hospital has a very interesting borrowing potential from some of the programs that, say, a standalone SNF doesn't qualify for. Now you can get some very attractive financing, be it through a HUD 242 type of program or some federal mortgage insurance program. So, and now that the debt is, it's long-term, non-recourse, very good rates, and that could help help the returns on an investment like that.
So in terms of black swan type opportunities, let's just start with something I've actually seen in the medical space. I recently had a conversation with an entrepreneur who is currently launching a cooperative working space for physicians. Everyone's familiar here with WeWork and that success story. He believes, and I think he's right, that the medical industry, given where it is with the Affordable Care Act, as has been discussed, there's definitely going to be an opportunity for doctors who don't want to work for big hospitals or the big healthcare providers to go out and start their own entrepreneurial practice, but they may not have the financing to either rent their own office space or go out and find their own office space. And this entrepreneur is actually launching something that will solve that problem and somewhat disrupt the industry. So I think that's something that could be a black swan, but could also be very interesting in going forward the next 5 to 10 years, given where we are.
Cornet?
Well, I would just speak some more to the project in Asia that's already at 27 hospitals, looking to grow by another 10 before an exit. And the cash flows of these hospitals are pretty much growing at 30% per year.
I should call DJ back for this deal, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, I know. They're all in 4 different countries, but they're also in clusters, urban clusters, which is giving them the opportunity of economies of scales and efficiencies by being nearby one another. That's my black swan in that it's doing very, very well.
Okay, David, you got one?
No, not really.
That's fine.
For a change. But I will say that the ongoing institutionalization, really transforming the medical industry, it won't be business as usual. Hospitals, medical systems will have to be much more profit oriented. It'll be a harder, colder, more competitive world for hospitals and doctors. So I think WeWorks, could be something that responds to that. But I think the privatization, institutionalization of the class itself is a big part of that, and in a way a black swan in the upcoming years. But I think the demand growth is going to be staggering when it kicks in, and it's a little gradual, but you know, really the estimates are 30 to 40 even more million new insured people. That's like two Australias in this country in a relatively short period of time. And you can say, well, the margins won't be there, but the demand is going to be really staggering. The demand for space will be really much bigger than what we see now, and it'll be a different industry.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the audience? Any great black swan ideas out there?
I have another black swan idea.
There we go.
Bring
okay.
it.
I like it.
I love black swans. I think they're beautiful. So another idea outside of the medical office space, outside of the healthcare space in general, is something that we've actually started looking at RMA. I don't know if anyone has read, but the gaming industry, casinos, it's changing. So what you're seeing now is a lot of the major gaming operators are spinning off their real estate into triple net lease REITs. And there's going to be an opportunity for someone to aggregate a smaller portfolio, or the smaller casinos into a larger portfolio, rather said, and potentially sell those to these new gaming REITs. And we're looking at that closely as a potential opportunity. So that's another idea.
So on that, let's talk about socially responsible investing.
What's socially irresponsible about gaming?
I'm all for it, but not everybody is. So ESG has been a very hot topic in Europe, how people socially invest in a socially responsible way. And just wondering if any of you are hearing from your investors and people you're talking to, especially the families, if there is an interest in socially responsible investing here now. As families look at buildings, are they looking for LEEDs building or green building? Are they looking for solar, or how to invest outside of gaming, tobacco, pornography? Is that we're not buying? What were you talking about, David, in Amsterdam? So how do we socially are we socially responsible? Is that an issue that matters to us?
Well, yeah, it does for a lot of families, but you know, they're profit oriented organizations. They've got, you know, return targets, they've got family members to support. So if it checks that box, in addition to being, you know, the first priority typically is a great investment. And if, by the way, it checks another box, which is, you know, it could be a number of things, but, you know, sustainable buildings, mm-hmm. energy efficient buildings, that's been a big theme. That'll continue to be a very big theme. LEED certification. It also coincides with the quality of investment. There's a very high correlation with LEED certification and a high quality building, mm-hmm. and valuation. So I think that's one area where I see it has been popular. It's getting more popular, you know, and even in medical, you know, my area, I think it's one of those things where you say, well, in general, you're supporting the medical industry. You're helping to capitalize the medical industry. So it's sort of, I would argue that it does, we check that box as well.
Anybody else? Does yield trump ESG, I guess is the question.
Certainly not for all investors, and not in Europe. I'd say generally in Europe, it's a pretty social place. So people are concerned with what they're putting out into the world and don't want to do anything to create harm while they're investing. What we found, though, is I think probably globally it's the same. As soon as that's attached to reduction operating costs, then it goes much further. So what we actually found is a lot of the sort of green things that we were doing in different buildings was just saving us a lot of money. And the great thing is in Europe, you can oftentimes get those paid by the government. So, you know, installing solar panels or, sorry, I don't know the English word, warmth called Upslag, it's something like brings the heat out of the ground when it's cold and puts the heat in the ground when it's warm.
Yeah.
Geothermal. This is also funded in part by the government. You can get very cheap money to fund it. So those things reduce operating costs. People love that. We've also actually used social programs to hide vacancy in retail locations and repurpose some retail spaces. So I think, you know, retail is really changing globally with the internet. And so we created things like a place in Spain during the height of the downturn for people to go get new job skills. And probably the biggest example of a social investment, we created a rooftop garden on one of our shopping centers in Naples, where we composted 98% of all the food waste that was coming out of that shopping center, and then we used that as a learning center for all the schools in the area, so students could learn about the cycle of food. And we got so much publicity from that. It was definitely a win-win on all fronts.
I'm getting the hand that we have 5 minutes, so I just wanted to ask each of you to give us some last thoughts, and then we'll open it up for questions. Corey, do you want to start?
Sure. My focus lately has been on the senior housing, and I'm a healthcare guy by training. So you look in that market, and there's going to be, as David mentioned, there is this, you know, they call the silver tsunami that's coming, and that's really going to hit within the next 12 to 15 years. The leading edge of the baby boomer wave, average age is 69. And so, and the average age of a resident in the senior housing community is in their early 80s. So I think as that population ages, the services that they're going to need is going to have to evolve with their needs. So initially, it might be just independent living type of scenario, then into assisted living. Then it's going to move into memory care. And then later on, it'll be some kind of a SNF, and eventually it'll tie back into the hospital market. And so as that wave, as a demographic wave comes along, the market has to adjust accordingly to make sure there's enough supply there to meet that demand. And I think that's where some of the opportunities are going to be.
Brett?
I would say my final thoughts are there's lots of opportunities that you could find that are outside of the box. Evaluate them seriously. I wouldn't just dismiss them because they're in. You hear something and you think, oh, no way that could ever work. I think everything's worth evaluating and figuring out if there is potential there. And that's how you can really make significant money. But a lot of you here are family offices, and therefore your goal is wealth preservation and not wealth creation. So you have to be careful, and maybe you allocate like a portfolio manager would, and you would say, I'll put 2 to 5% of my money in venture. You can say the same thing in real estate, or your allocation to real estate. I'll put 2 to 5% of my money that's allocated to real estate in more high risk, more opportunistic, black swan, if you will, type ideas. And I think that can make sense.
So since the panel is diversifying beyond your normal portfolio or normal real estate portfolio, I'd have two answers. One, if you're a family office and the balance of your wealth and the balance of your investment portfolio is in a real estate strategy that you know that you've been doing for years, I would say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So separately, there's family offices that have, I would argue, maybe 15 to 20% could go into real estate. But if you're diversifying and looking for defensive strategies, I'd think about two or three global macro themes that you think are important that are playing out now. Certainly, population growth, aging population, where energy is or being used, where industries are setting down roots, and then you hire someone like Gila to find you the best in breed that are expressing exposure to those macro themes via real estate.
I'm going to give you the 10 bucks later for that. Thank you. David, you're up.
Well, I think real estate's a great diversifier in portfolios in general. And so it's advocated that anywhere between 10 to 20% should go into real estate. That's both public and private. And private offers lower correlations, lower volatility. It's a hard asset. You've got more control over it. And within the context of the economy, you know, we've been in an up cycle for some 7 years now, and we know that business cycles do occur, and they tend to be every 7 to 9 years in this country. I think most people think we're due. I don't know if it's tomorrow, I don't know if it's next year, but it's probably in the next, say, year and a half to 2 years. I think most people would concur with that, unfortunately. And you need to think defensively. You know, you need to think about pricing. You know, pricing in real estate has been very frothy, particularly in global gateway markets. And where should you be in a slow economy, in a recession economy? I think you should be in real estate that is necessity based. And one of those to me is medical. It's also grocery anchored retail, for example. It's multifamily. People got to live someplace. And it should also be more income-oriented and less capital value-driven, right? So that's really, in a bull market, you know, we've had a lot of appreciation. It's been great, particularly in global gateway markets. But, you know, into a recession, you know, it should be more income-oriented and lower volatility. So, you know, obviously, I favor medical, income-oriented, Class A and B real estate in diversified markets around the country.
We have time for just a couple of questions.
I don't get my closeout speech.
Oh, wait, David, I'm sorry. I left you off.
What the advice I give to family offices is very different than the advice I gave to, for example, Blackstone. And the family offices I advise to be very conservative because, again, capital preservation is what it's all about for them. There, we basically looked at creating a very nice, smooth lease expiration schedule over the next 20 years. Taking on very low levels of leverage and creating a positive leverage effect using lots of very cheap debt, and also looking at the short-term debt cycle. I mean, you're all day today I've heard about froth and recession, so really being product appropriate to that short-term debt cycle. Europe is 3 to 4 years behind, so now we're still gung-ho on home building and warehousing and things that are really pro-cyclical, but we'll want to get out of those in a couple of years and take more defensive positions. So that's sort of the advice I would give. So